Well, welcome to another Sunday evening with Zion's Trumpet. Yours truly, Brother Daniel. How's everybody down there in Pal Talk Land? Good, good, good. All right. Okay. Anybody have anything to share before we start? Anything on your heart? Okay, well, I was going to do that song for Herman this week. I promised I'd do it this week. Oh, Andrew and Megan, say hi to everybody. Andrew and Megan are here. That's Jamie's son and daughter-in-law, Maranatha Dreamer. Remember Maranatha Dreamer, Jamie? He was here. They moved up here this week, got an apartment over by Kim, Sister Kim, so and he got a job already. So Monday he starts a new job. So they're visiting with Kim, listening on Kim's computer tonight. It's Andrew and Megan and their little daughter, Rachel. He is our peace, who hath broken down every wall. He is our peace, he is our peace. He is our peace, who hath broken down every wall. He is our peace, casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. He is our peace, he is our peace. Casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. Our peace, he is our peace. He is our peace, who hath broken down every wall. He is our peace, he is our peace. He is our peace, who hath broken down every wall. He is our peace, he is our peace. Casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. He is our peace, casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. He is our peace, he is our peace. He is our peace, who hath broken down every wall. Broken down every wall. He is our peace, he is our peace. Casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. Casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. He is our peace, he is our peace. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. But the seed must be sown to bring forth grain. Nothing is born without suffering and pain. And God never plows in the soul of man without intention, purpose, and plan. So when you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. When you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. For like a farmer, God chooses a field from which he expects an excellent yield. Rejoice though your heart be broken in two. God seeks to bring forth a rich harvest in you. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. But the seed must be thrown forth grain. Nothing is born without suffering and pain. And God never plows in the soul of man without intention, purpose, or plan. So when you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. When you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. For like the farmer, God chooses a field from which he expects an excellent yield. Rejoice though your heart is broken in two. God seeks to bring forth a rich harvest in you. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. The farmer plows through fields of green, and the blade of the plow is sharp and keen. But the seed must be sown to bring forth grain. Nothing is born without suffering and pain. And God never plows in the soul of man without intention, purpose, and plan. When you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. When you feel the plow's sharp blade, let not your heart be sorely afraid. For like a farmer, God chooses a field from which he expects an excellent yield. Rejoice though your heart be broken in two. God's meek little home, a rich harvest.
Amen. Alrighty. Well, anybody have anything to share before we start off? God bless you, Rich. Okay, well, maybe when we're done, I was going to do something a little different tonight. I had a couple things in my heart. One was on what's going on in Egypt. Another was something spiritual. I heard a little tape this week. I thought it was good, and I was going to share it. So let's start with that, with the politics first, what's going on in Egypt. You know, I talked about Egypt the other week, and I thought I'd give you a little update on what's going on as far as I can see over there. It's still pretty early in the game, but the signs aren't good. A couple bad signs this week, three of them, basically. First one was Egypt's Supreme Military Council appointed an Islamist judge to head the committee that's going to draw up the new constitution for Egypt. An Islamist judge. His name is Tariq al-Bashri.
He's a widely respected judge, and he's regarded by many as being a, quote, moderate. But he's not really a moderate because he has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And a well-known human rights blogger from Egypt called Wael Abbas, when he was asked about this choice, he said it was a, quote, worrying choice. He said because there's no such thing as a moderate Islamist. He said we want a secular state that respects all religions and which belongs to all religions. The second bad sign we saw this week was just the other day that Supreme Military Council gave permission, I'm sure you know this, for two Iranian warships to transit the Suez Canal. And of course, this is a complete reversal from former President Mubarak's position. And it's the first time in 30 years that an Iranian ship like that was allowed to pass through the canal. In my mind, the military rulers of Egypt have to know that they're helping Iranian expansion and strengthening the Iranian-led alliance between Turkey, Syria, Hezbollah, and Hamas. So they're doing it on purpose. Just as Saudi Arabia turned its back on Washington last week because it was furious what our country did, Mubarak, and allowed Iranian ships to dock at their port for the first time in 30 years. Now Egypt seems to be doing the same thing. The third sign was a very bad one, and it was the return of Yusuf al-Qadari. He's an Egyptian Sunni cleric. He's the most popular cleric in the world, and he's aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood. He was expelled from Egypt by Mubarak in 1961 for subversive activities. And it wasn't just the fact that he returned to his homeland the other day. It was the way he returned that is so telling. I'm going to read you a little part of a report from Debka File that mentions this. This is a quote, and I got links to all these articles again if you want to, you know, download them or read them or anything. This is Thursday, February 17th. They said the Muslim Brotherhood was allowed to take charge of opposition demonstrations in the emblematic Tahrir Square. They were also given permission to build a platform after the other opposition and movements had been refused permission to do the same thing. And ahead of the big event on Friday night, the soldiers withdrew from the square and the Muslim Brotherhood's strong arm brigades moved in. Opposition leaders who tried to mount the platform alongside of Brotherhood speakers were thrown off the stage, dragged off the square without the army interfering. They said the sermon that was preached by Qadari had nothing in common with the goals of freedom, rights, reforms, or a better life for which the people demonstrated in Tahrir Square. He said not only must the Egyptian people go out and conquer Al-Aqsa Mosque, that's Jerusalem, he said Cairo must open the Egyptian-Gaza Strip border to, quote, our brothers, the Palestinian Hamas. He hammered home demands that would have taken Egypt beyond even scrapping its 1979 peace treaty with Israel all the way to jihad. And for this speech, the Egyptian military rulers gave this radical preacher a national platform over state television. That's bad news. They said that by this means, the military rulers achieved two objectives. One, letting the Muslim Brotherhood adherents mass in the square, thus diminishing the role played by the other opposition factions. And two, it flashed a graphic warning to the Obama administration to stop pushing for a rapid transition to democracy because it would only lead to a Muslims taking over power in government and parliament. Debka File's Middle East sources believe the general's latitude toward a notorious radical like Qadari might make sense in regional terms. The military regime in Cairo hopes his presence in Egypt will contribute to their acceptance by the Brotherhood. Okay, they're trying to be accepted by the Brotherhood. This was a test for future cooperation. And if it continues to work smoothly, Qadari will rise over the heads of all the opposition groups and be the most prominent civilian power broker in the country with the greatest influence on the Supreme Military Council decision-making. That's bad news. So Qadari was escorted into Tahrir Square by the army, and he was the only one who was allowed to erect a platform. Then the soldiers withdrew and let the Muslim Brotherhood thugs take charge of the entire square. And when some of the original leaders of this uprising tried to go up on a platform with Qadari, they were thrown off the stage. There's conflicting reports regarding how many people were actually at that victory rally. They ranged from 200,000 to 2 million. undoubtedly most of the people who were there were Muslim Brotherhood people or Muslim Brotherhood supporters. So Qadari was marched in by the army, had a stage built for him only, and he proceeded to take credit for the revolution and set himself up as its leader. And nobody stepped forward to challenge him. Nobody could. Now, people who have been sounding the alarm about Egypt, that's eventually going to fall the Muslim Brotherhood, they've been ridiculed and called paranoid and all kinds of things. But the fact is, the same thing that happened to Iran appears to be happening to Egypt. On February 9th, 2 days before Mubarak resigned, a Jewish magazine called Tablet published an article by a guy named Lee Smith, and he was warning that if Qadari returns to Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood is going to come to power. This is before Mubarak ever stepped down. This is what he said. I'll just give you a little quote here. The article was called Jewel of the Nile. They call Qadari the Jewel of the Nile. He says, Yosef al-Qadari, the world's most popular and authoritative Sunni cleric, is a Muslim Brotherhood-aligned Egyptian based in Qatar. A return to his home country will be dangerous for Israel and the West. Qadari is a media mongol who has risen to fame on the back of the information age technology, yet whose information is essentially medieval. He approves of wife beating. He defends female genital mutilation and signs off on female suicide bombers. So that's the kind of guy who everybody says is the moderate. And by the way, if you don't know what female genital mutilation is, you should look it up. It's one of the most disgusting and barbaric things you can possibly do to a little girl. I'm not going to say what it is. You want to look it up, go ahead. But it's barbaric. And the vast majority of, quote, moderate, enlightened Egyptians willingly practice this animal brutality on their own children. As a matter of fact, back in May of 2008, there was a group, and for years they were fighting and petitioning Egypt's leaders to make the practice illegal. And finally, they managed to get Mubarak's government to officially outlaw, they call it FGM, female genital mutilation. Unfortunately, a year later, and that was only in 2007. In 2008, a year after FGM was made illegal, an article was posted on a women's rights website, and it was lamenting the fact that the impact of the ban hasn't yet been felt in Egyptian society. And the article was called, Egypt Has Yet to Feel the Impact of FGM Ban. I just want to read you a little bit of what this article says. It says, here in Egypt, meanwhile, activists who worried that the country's attention-getting criminalization of the cutting wouldn't be enforced say their fears have been fulfilled in the past year. It's no longer on the government agenda. They moved on, said Sahem Abdul Salam. The law punishes practitioners with between 3 months and 2 years in jail or fines ranging from $190 to $940. But during the year since the law was passed, no charges have been pressed against any parents or practitioners of genital mutilation, often referred to as FGM in Egypt. A 2005 government health survey found that 96% of Egyptian women who had ever been married had undergone that procedure. In 2007, Egypt's senior Islamic leader, Grand Mufti al-Gamour, said the practice was forbidden by Islam, arguing that while it had been accepted in the past universally, recent health studies of its dangers make it unacceptable. And he noted that the Prophet, Muhammad's wives and daughters, did not undergo that dangerous and sometimes deadly procedure. But local imams, nonetheless, remain staunch supporters of the practice and have characterized efforts to stamp it out as a form of cultural invasion. Last year, she says, the Muslim Brotherhood, Egypt's largest yet officially illegal opposition party, denounced the law for interfering in traditional, that's Islamic, traditional practices, and they held a workshop against the law 2 days before the vote. A report released by the European Parliament in April warns that the ritual practice is on the rise in European nations, with 180,000 girls at risk on the continent every year, despite legislation being debated in Parliament that would criminalize it in all the European Union nations. Now, if you think a society that can do something like that to their own children has any idea what true liberty and freedom is, you're insane. The fact is, most Muslims are animals. They're animals, regardless of where they live. They don't have a clue what liberty really is, and they're not the least bit interested in finding out what it means either. They love their Islamic customs. They love their Islamic traditions, which are a throwback to 7th century Arabia. The majority of them will never vote for freedom, true freedom,
because they don't have any idea what true freedom is. They love Islam and they want Islam. The fact that FGM is on the rise in European nations, where many of these Muslims have immigrated, that proves that you can take a Muslim out of a political Islamic bondage, but you can't take that filthy culture and that filthy religion out of the Muslim unless they reject that whole religion and walk away from it. Any man who does that to his own daughter, I believe he should be castrated. Castrated. Without trial and without delay. And that's the kind of guy Qadari is. He's for that. Anyway, yesterday, the day after Qadari spoke in Tahrir Square to all those, quote, moderate Muslims, a writer for the what's called the International Civil Liberties Alliance posted an article, and the article was called Youssef al-Qadari's reception in Tahrir Square is a clear indication that Islamism will take over Egypt. It's a long title, but that's what the title was. His reception at Tahrir Square is a clear indication that Islamism, that means radical Islam, is going to take over Egypt. This is what he said. It's a quote, the Western political elite seem to be dancing with glee at the prospect of democracy in the Middle East. The region has suddenly been transformed into a land of rainbows, fluttering butterflies, and choruses of kumbaya, as peace in our time erupts there. This demonstrates how little Western leaders understand. In the Islamic world, democracy, like any other man-made form of government, is anathema to Islamic teaching, which only recognizes Sharia as the source of law. Western leaders who have allowed the Muslim Brotherhood to attain its new position of leadership in Egypt are either grossly incompetent or have embarked on a policy of Islamization both at home and abroad. Either way, they are unfit to lead great nations and are doing serious damage to Western civilization and to the prospect of world peace. Of course, fools in the West may argue between moderate and extreme Islamism as the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled Egypt prepares for war against Israel. Egypt will not become a democratic paradise, but a Sharia hellhole. The way the situation in Egypt has been handled by our myopic political elite demonstrates a lack of understanding of Islamism and its goals. Wishful thinking has now become the sole basis of policy making. It's suddenly become a far more dangerous place. But at least Western leaders can feel good about themselves as the world moves towards tragedy. The reception given to Youssef al-Qadari in Tahrir Square and the numbers present is a clear indication of the direction of Egypt. This is not a direction towards Western democracy, but towards the rule of the Muslim Brotherhood. This isn't the only organization or person who's been scratching their heads wondering what on earth is wrong with Western leaders. What are they thinking? Are they completely blind? Are they insane? Are they suicidal? What? You know, as this writer says, either they're grossly incompetent or they've embarked on a policy of Islamization, both at home and abroad. I think that's true of both ways. I think some of them are grossly incompetent. They don't belong in office. But there's many other ones who know exactly what's going on, and they have indeed embarked on a policy of Islamization. Fact is, most of our Western leaders are socialists or outright communists. They are the left. And the left has embarked on a policy of Islamization by joining with Islamists to overthrow Western capitalism and freedom. Some of them probably really think that once they've achieved their common goal of destroying Western civilization, they're going to outsmart those dumb Muslims and end up with the whole pie, you know, in complete control. See, but the problem is, the Islamists aren't nearly as stupid as leftists think they are. They're murderers, they're liars, they're thieves, they're animals, but they're not stupid. If you want to see what's coming on a grand scale, all you got to do is look at what happened Friday afternoon at Tahrir Square. See, during the uprising, the initial uprising, it took 18 days, the young heroes of the revolution were holding hands with communists, socialists, members of the Muslim Brotherhood, anybody who wanted to come. They were saying how, you know, everyone in the square was one big happy family. The mood was inclusive. Everybody's welcome. But this Friday, the scene was just the opposite. Very different. The mood was very exclusive. The youth who had started the revolution weren't even allowed to share the same stage with Qadari. Imagine that. The ones who had been so inclusive were now being excluded by the Muslim Brotherhood. One of those leaders, one of those heroes, was the Google executive named Wael Gonen. And this is what the Al Arabiya News Channel said about that day. It says, Google executive Wael Gonen, who emerged as a leading voice in Egypt's uprising, was barred from the stage at Tahrir Square by security guards, an AFP photographer said. Gonen tried to take the stage in Tahrir, but men who appeared to be guarding Kodari barred him from doing so. Gonum, who was angered by the episode, then left the square with his face hidden by an Egyptian flag. Okay, Mr. Gonum is the administrator of the original Facebook page that helped launch the revolution. And he is a leftist, and he worked with other leftists, like the April 6th movement, to start the revolution. And I say, well, since he was so angered by the episode, and since Facebook is such a good tool to spark revolution, maybe Mr. Gonum can now go back and start a new Facebook page to rally the Egyptian masses against Kodari and the Muslim Brotherhood, who are now hijacking his revolution. But it's not going to happen because Mr. Gonum didn't stay angered very long. A few hours after the incident, he tweeted on his Twitter page how much he loves and respects Kodari. He says, "I loved Sheikh Kodari today. He was truly inspired when he said, 'Today I'm going to address both Muslims and Christians.'" You know, he loved that. So maybe Mr. Gonum was just trying to save face, because saving face is it's a very important part of Muslim culture and society. They'll do anything to save face, lie, cheat, steal, anything. Or maybe he's smart enough to see the writing on the wall, and he doesn't want to make any trouble because he doesn't want to receive the same treatment from the Muslim Brotherhood once they take power that he did from Mubarak. At any rate, this little snafu is just a taste of what awaits delusional leftists once Islam gains the upper hand throughout the world. The leftist Islamic alliance is going to break down once the Islamists have no more use, you know, for stooges like Gonim. Just a week ago, people like Thomas Friedman, Roger Cohen, Fouad Abjami, they're all, you know, big-time columnists. They're all singing the praise of Mr. Gonim as if he was the new leader of the revolution. I'll give you some quotes. This is just a week ago. Everybody thought this guy was going to become the leader of the revolution. Friedman says, he says, "Indeed, it was no surprise that the emerging spokesman for this uprising is Wael Gonim, a Google marketing executive who is Egyptian. He opened a Facebook page called We Are All Khalid Said, named for an activist who was allegedly beaten to death by police in Alexandria. And that page helped spark the first protests here. Gonim was abducted by Egyptian security officials on January 28th, and he was released on Monday. On Monday night, he gave an emotional TV interview that inspired many more people, galvanized by the words of Wael Gonim, the young Google executive who got the Mubarak treatment, 12-day disappearance, blinding interrogation, before a tweet that will one day be etched on some granite memorial, which says, he said, 'Freedom is a blessing that deserves fighting for.'